India bought 400 million ounces of silver in the last 2 years, and that's about almost exactly the amount of silver that's been bled off of the COMEX over the last 2 years. Now, I'm not saying it's tit for tat, but what I am saying is a good portion of the silver that left the COMEX.
Andy Scheckman, how you doing, man?
I am doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks for coming on. So you just got back from overseas. Curious to hear about your adventures over there, what you're hearing over there. But let's start out with there's some big buying going on in the metals here. Doesn't seem like it's the case as it was the last few years, meaning gold, silver would spike up and just get beat down. And every little dip, it just gets bought and rises more. So what's your take and opinion on that? What's going on in the metals market?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting what's happening right now. I mean, it's really interesting in the respect that the public is completely asleep at the wheel here in the United States. And, you know, you have really since November, December of last year, an infatuation with things like NVIDIA and Bitcoin. And how can you argue with it? I mean, the results speak for themselves, right? And the return has been phenomenal. But if you take a look at what's been happening at the same time metals have been rising, of course, you know, we've all been told that gold and silver are, you know, barbaric relics of the past, pet rocks that earn no interest. Now, I could go back, you know, way back and show you how that really isn't true when you go through time. But the reason I bring it up is that what we've seen over the past several months are rates rising, not falling. And you know, in an environment where we have 5.5% on a short-term treasury, that's supposed to be kryptonite for the price of gold.
Right.
We have seen this correlation as of late where the 10-year treasury and the price of gold, which were very symbiotic, very attached at the hip in terms of their direction, have now broken free completely and totally where, you know, the price of bonds is falling, meaning the yields are rising. At the same time, so too is the price of gold. Now, the price of gold is rising with positive real rates, if you believe the nonsense coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the CPI, as I call it, it tells us that inflation is, you know, just over 3% annualized. And that's not true. It really is, according to John Williams of Shadow Stats, north of 10 or 11%, right in line with the 10% increase we've seen in the post office the other day as they raised the cost of their postage stamp, evidently three times the rate of inflation, to 10%. And right. So if you go to shadowstats.com, John will tell you we're 10, 11% inflation. Okay, fine. But let's just take the CPI at its face value. We have positive real return. We have a strong dollar. We have these inverse correlations that are supposed to be horrible for gold. And if you look at the amount of ETF holdings that have come out of GLD and likewise, you know, to a lesser degree out of SLV, you would think that the public is completely not participating in this. If you take a look at the number of gold American Eagles sold coming out of the mint, the numbers that they produce, it's the lowest amount going all the way back to 2019. And so as the public has actually been selling into the rally, and you know, by the way, as a side note, I mentioned this to my friend Bill Holter, and I said, look at the amount of metals coming out of the ETFs as the price is rising. He says something that I've said a little bit, but he said it with a little more conviction. He says, hey, he said, yeah, you know, BS. That's actually a lot of the share redemption by the insiders who can take, you know, their GLD shares and convert them into physical metal in a much more opaque manner, with much less transparency than you would see on deliveries coming off of COMEX. So that's some of it. There are insiders that are using the ETFs as a way to accumulate physicals through share redemption. But really what I notice more than anything is the public really not participating in an environment where the price of gold and silver continue to show tremendous strength. And what that is to me is, you know, we have our brain dead moronic Treasury Secretary who was in Brazil just 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, in the backyard of BRICS, in the backyard of Russia, you know, a charter member of the BRICS Alliance. And Janet says, you know, we need to not just, and we by meaning we, the United States and the European Union and the UK, not just sanction the Russians, but we need to actually confiscate the $380 billion in Forex reserves and use them to fund the Ukrainian war. So, crazy. You know, and she's at it again. She was just in, gave a 3 days ago, gave an interview to CNBC or last week rather. And she says, you know, if the Chinese, well, we're okay with the Chinese having a relationship. Well, thanks, Janet. That's great. But if they do anything to aid the Russian war effort, well, we're going to sanction their banks, their corporations, and the country itself. Now, mind you, it's okay for us to give money to the Ukraine, you know, billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars that have no congressional oversight. No one knows where the hell it's going or what right. It's being used for. It's okay for us to do that. But damn it, if China wants to do that with their ally, well, that's going to cause a big sanctioning parade and problem. And again, she just threatened to sanction Iran again as well. So, you know, it's an environment of hypocrisy. The rest of the world looks at us as being completely hypocritical, where we can go into Iraq 20 years ago. We are still occupying their country. We're sanctioning 14 of their banks for trading with Iran. And they asked us for $1 billion out of the $95 billion that they made in oil revenue in 2023. And it's held at the New York Fed. Now, someone told me that just ended, that we just gave it back to them. I can't confirm it. But at the time when they asked us for it, we said, no, not a good time. And so what did Iraq do? They formally applied to BRICS. They made trading in dollars illegal. If you own it, a business, and trade in them, you'll be kicked out of the, or you'll be put in jail and your business will be confiscated. And as of January 1, there are no green dollar bills in any of the banks in Iraq. They got rid of them. So when you talk about the perception of being hypocritical, I mean, Janet Yellen exemplifies that. But to the point, right, what I believe is happening is that these countries have given up the holding of U.S. treasuries, which in a historical context, Andy, has about that big of a footprint of countries accepting another country's debt as an asset, where gold has a 5,000-year history behind it. So they are selling treasuries and replacing it with gold. Now, if you look at this, the thought process behind that, number one, over the past 25 years, going back to the turn of the century, you know, gold has averaged about 9.1% compounding over that period of time. The S&P 500, about 7%. And right. It has tripled or better the bond market. But the real reason is, aside from the outperformance, is it is an asset Doug Casey has made famous his statement, an asset that is simultaneously no one else's liability. There is no counterparty risk. There is no sanction or default risk, or in the case of Janet saying we need to confiscate, no confiscation risk. And so I think what is happening here is that on any sign of weakness, you see, knock it off, you see a large group of countries, not just China, not just Russia, a large group of countries in the Southern Hemisphere that are exchanging treasuries. That's why we see yields slowly rising on the 10-year. They're selling them and also right. replacing it with gold, which is putting a floor under the price, so much so that for the past several weeks, we've seen arbitrage happening on the Shanghai Gold Exchange, where silver has been priced as much as $3 higher, where the traders in the West are incentivized to accumulate in on the COMEX and the LBMA and deliver in London or in Shanghai. And the same thing with gold, 50, 60, 70 bucks higher. It's been higher. It's been a little lower, but enough to arbitrage to incentivize these traders who have access to all three markets to deliver in the West purchase in the West and deliver in the East. To me, that is what's putting a floor underneath it, because the public in this country, as Rick Rule says, 0.5% allocation from Joe and Jane Sixpack to the Harvard Endowment Fund. But I will tell you, in my mind, the participation is as low as I've seen in the better part of 4 years. It's going unnoticed. And that is, to me, an incredibly solid and strong contrarian indicator that you know, once the American public wakes up and starts really jumping in, as I expect them to do so, because I don't see smooth sailing between now and November. I don't think most people do who watch your channel. And all I would say is that the probability of seeing an interest level increased by the American public in the next several months to me is fairly substantial. And as that happens, we already see strength. What happens when, you know, maybe that number goes to 2% allocation, a fourfold increase, or heaven forbid a 5% allocation, as most financial advisors, I think, would say, which is woefully underallocated, in my opinion, but that's a tenfold increase. And that demand should and probably will have a significant impact on the price of gold, as tight as it is already, without any U.S. participation.
Yeah, no, that would set things into orbit, at least I would assume so. But it's an interesting point here, I think, and I'm trying to work this out, and this is perhaps a rhetorical question, but I'd like to ask you it. So it seems, I think it's a fact that gold and silver are shifting from west to east. What are the implications of that? Because I don't think that's been thought through enough. And it's a huge implication, right? So in your mind, yeah, tell me your opinion.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's look at silver first, right? So, you know, everyone talks about gold, but silver, it's huge. I mean, India bought 400 million ounces of silver in the last 2 years, and that's about almost exactly the amount of silver that's been bled off of the COMEX over the last 2 years. Now, I'm not saying it's tit for tat, but what I am saying is a good portion of the silver that left the COMEX has found its way into India.
It's in India.
Yeah, and you know, when you realize that India bought 3,625 tons of silver last year, by far the largest importer in the world, so far this year, just in January and February, those are the only numbers we have. Those numbers are up 260% in February to a record high. They've already imported 2,932 tons this year, and they bought 3,600 last year, this year. And that's just for the first couple of months that we have records of. And so, there's a group in Canada right now of mining executives and business insiders that are lobbying, you know, the government in Ottawa to change silver from an industrial metal to a strategic metal, to a metal that is needed in so many areas, not just green and digital, but also military. In so many ways, the need for silver is strategic. And so they are lobbying the government in that respect. So when you talk about what silver represents, it's a strategic metal that anything that is electronic or digital or green that conducts electricity, just about all of it. I mean, copper is there in some of it, nowhere near as good as silver, but silver is predominantly in just about anything that conducts electricity. And, you know, I gave a speech 2 years ago at Jay Martin's conference, Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, and it's one of my favorite conferences. I go every year. Yeah,
it's great.
And actually, I'm on with Jay later today, and I suggest everyone check out what he has to say and his conference. But anyways, in the conference, I talked about the military-industrial complex. This was 2 years ago. And I talked about 500 ounces of silver in the tip of a Tomahawk's cruise missile. This guy comes up to me, gives me this cup. He says, you know,
awesome.
He gave me this cup this year. But last year, he came up to me and he said, I work as a consultant for the DOD. And my baby was the Patriot missile program. I'm not sure about those numbers, but I'll check. And we talked for a while, and that was it. I forgot about him. Well, he met me in Vancouver this year. He was there. He came and talked to me after the show. And in it, he said to me, you were right. I'll be damned. You know, there's about 400 to 500 ounces between 15 and 16 kilos of silver in the tip of a Tomahawk cruise missile. And the reason I bring this up is that the Silver Institute omits any aerospace and any military applications in their numbers that showed a 185 million ounce shortfall again last year. And the question is, why do they omit them? And if this gentleman who helped design, he said, everything I'm telling you is declassified, so it's okay. And he says, if this guy designed the Patriot missile, and he would show me all sorts of pictures on how they had it on a platform off the Gulf of California, how they were trying to get it to take off vertically rather than horizontally out of a torpedo tube, and they had problems with the guidance. And we talked for a while, and he said, I'll be damned, you're right. Well, if there's that much silver in one Tomahawk cruise missile, how about all the missiles and all the aerospace, the high-tech weaponry that we see being manufactured and being used and sent off all around the world, whether it be to the Ukraine or the Middle East or wherever it is, to the point where now, you know, we're being told, the military is telling Congress that we have a shortfall in our own munitions and we need billions of dollars more for our own. But if silver really is involved in this, you have to ask yourself, maybe this explains why, maybe, again, there's a fine line between conspiracy and reality, but maybe this explains why you have a couple of commercial banks that would be short, naked short, the right. largest concentrated short position in any commodity traded on the COMEX ever. Why yeah. silver, this tiny little market, why be naked short silver? Why hold it down for so long, so counterintuitively? And why does India say, thank you very much for controlling the paper price? We would like to stand for delivery for, you know, 400 million ounces over the last 2 years. And you add in these numbers, you're getting up to, you know, 500 million ounces that they've accumulated. Why? Is there something hidden in all of this? And I would say, you know, again, you know, what does logic have to say? What does Occam's razor have to say? Now, when we talk about gold, it's a different story. Gold was reclassified in 2019 by the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, as the world's only other tier one reserve asset. And it is considered a riskless asset. In fact, I'd like to read to you something here real quick. And this is from the International Monetary Fund. And, you know, the IMF is the Western version of the Western version of, they're a Western-friendly entity. It's about 150 countries that was actually developed at the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944, I want to say, in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. And the IMF has been kind of integral in a lot of the ways that I have formulated my thought process. In 2020, there was a report on their website saying that all of these countries that represent the IMF, the majority of them are saying, we want a new Bretton Woods. We want a new system, a new system because this one's broken. So listen to, and before I read this, Kristalina Georgieva, the head of the IMF, came out just a few months ago and said, any central bank digital currency that is ever issued, if it's not pegged to something, will just be more fiat. But what is gold, according to the BIS? The only other tier one asset. Who's been buying all the gold over the last 3 years? Oh yeah, the central banks have been buying more than any time in central bank history. Yeah. So listen to the way that the IMF classifies gold. And it says gold, as per International Monetary Fund, is the only universally accepted financial asset that is not someone else's liability. From the IMF, financial assets are economic assets that are financial instruments. Financial assets include claims and, by convention, monetary gold held in the form of gold bullion. A financial claim is a financial instrument that has a counterparty liability. Gold bullion is not a claim and does not have a corresponding liability. It is treated as a financial asset, however, because of its special role as a means of financial exchange and international payments by monetary authorities and as a reserve asset held by monetary authorities. In other words, they're saying there is no claim against it. It has no counterparty liability, but yet it's a financial asset. Do you think there's any reason why Kristalina Georgieva would say that? Why the BIS reclassified gold? Why the central banks are not only draining the exchanges and repatriating their gold from the Bank of England and the New York Fed, which, by the way, the New York Fed won't even answer when they are asked, and even under the Freedom of Information Act, have not answered who's been taking all their gold back. Put all these things together and you can see just how important gold really is. And in my opinion, it has substituted in many of these Southern Hemisphere countries the role that the U.S. Treasury has filled, and it has less volatility right now. Yep. It has no counterparty liability, no sanction or confiscation or default risk, and is being remonetized around the world. And I do believe there will come a time when it is pegged to a new financial system, whether it arises from the West and the IMF or from the Southern Hemisphere or the East and from the BRICS nations, who will peg it to a new system using distributed ledger technology to show the veracity and the immutability through auditing, of course, wherever it's held. It has to be independently audited to make sure the ledger is not being messed with, because if it's a private ledger, if it's not an open ledger, well, then the people controlling the ledger can obviously mess with things. So you have to have it audited and transparent. And that's why Zoltan Pozsar says we've entered Bretton Woods 3. Bretton Woods 1 right. was when we took over for the pound sterling in 44. Bretton Woods 2 when we became the petrodollar. And now Bretton Woods 3, a system that is all about commodities and transparency. So yes, it is way bigger than people think. It is way bigger. And that's the problem, Andy, is that guys like you and me have to sound the alarm. And the media in the West doesn't just do a poor job. They do no job of telling right. people just how relevant this exodus of gold from the West to the East, how relevant it is. But one last point I'd like to hammer home, and that it doesn't just stop there, right? So you have the BRICS grain exchange. In fact, I want to read you two other things, and I know you're letting Please. Me go on a rant, and go I ahead. Really appreciate it, because I think that it's really, really important that people understand the way that these countries view things. This is a comment that was made by the chairman of the Shanghai Gold Exchange on May 15th, 2014. And he says, Shanghai Gold Exchange will change the current gold market with its consumed in the East, but priced in the West arrangement. When China has the right to speak at the international gold market, the true price of gold will be revealed. Now, put that in context with what I'm about to read to you. And that is that, you know, I've talked about for 4 years about the fact that there will be a common settlement currency with the BRICS. And a lot of that came from a man named Sergei Glazniev. He's a finance minister from Russia. And we've known this, right? We've known this for a long time. He's talked about the fact that there would be two baskets, one of currencies, one of commodities, and presumably gold because of its tier one status, and that it would be digital. We've known this. We've said this a million times. And, you know, we talked about it last year. Maybe it would be issued at the meeting in August. Now they're talking about maybe issuing the meeting in October. Until they come out with that common settlement currency, they've all been trading in their local currencies, like Brazil selling corn and soybeans to China for yuan, which is immediately convertible into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Now, that settlement in yuan chips away at the dollar settlement that always would have settled in dollars. And then the excess going into bonds instead of, or into gold instead of bonds, chips away at the reserve status. So it's having an effect even before they issue the common settlement currency. But there was a new interview came out on TASS, which is a Russian website I read a lot, and it's very accurate. Oftentimes we hear things there weeks before we hear it in the West. And so a man named Yuri Ushakov. Okay. And what he basically said is confirmation of what we've been talking about. He said that the idea of the currency is that there are going to be two baskets, a basket of currencies of all the countries involved, and the second basket of commodities, mostly gold, but others too. But gold, primarily, we've known that. He said it would be digital. We've known that too. And that's like the Project M Bridge, which was the cross-border program that was developed by United Arab Emirates, who just joined the BRICS, by China. And I think, Singapore, I forgot the third country, but doesn't matter. And it allows for countries to trade with one another in central bank digital currencies cross-border without using the SWIFT system. And at the end of 2023, we saw the first ever cross-border gold purchase using digital yuan in the Project M Bridge. So wow. It's happening. But so we've known all of this, right? And that's not the part that I want to focus on. The part I want to focus on is the comment that he made. And I want people to really listen to this. Think about what I just said to the chairman of the Shanghai Gold Exchange. When we get the chance to really speak at the international gold table, the real price of gold will be revealed. So this is a comment that he made in this interview. He says, and I've been saying this for 3 years, going to happen, by the way. He says, the second part of this is price. He says, for the moment, let's underline for the moment, price is determined by Western speculation, where we produce these commodities, we consume them, but we do not have our own price mechanism, which should balance supply and demand. During the COVID panic, the price of oil, fell to nearly zero. Now, actually, he's wrong there. It fell to negative 40 a barrel for a short period of time, as there were tankers in the Gulf of Mexico with nowhere to go. Then there was refineries to take the oil. So fine, we'll pay you $40. Take it. I mean, talk about the tail wagging the dog and the manipulation in the futures markets. But anyways, he says, here's the important part. He says, it's impossible to make strategic planning for economic development if you do not control prices of basic commodities. Here it is. Price formation with this new currency should get rid of Western exchanges of commodities. Now, simultaneously, they talked about the BRICS Grain Exchange, where they say prices globally are primarily determined on the Chicago Commodity Exchange. Moscow and the BRICS also seek to move away from trading grain for U.S. dollars in favor of national currencies of the BRICS member states. So they're building a grain exchange. So they're trading, like we've seen Russia just cancel, or China cancel huge grain contracts with Australia and the United States in favor of Russia and Brazil in local currencies, and then settled in gold, or the proceeds sent back to China and converted into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. How many people know that the Chinese bought the London Metals Exchange a few years ago, which isn't the LBMA, which is precious metals, it's base metals, copper, zinc, lead, all of that stuff. So they're buying up all of the commodities, soft, like wheat and corn and soybeans. They're buying all the base metals like zinc and lead and steel and copper. They're buying all the precious metals that aren't nailed down and, in fact, are arbitraging the price higher by incentivizing traders on the West to buy on the West and deliver in the East. Do you see a problem with all of this? Slowly, little by little by little, they are cornering the world's commodities. What did Zoltan Pozsar say? Bretton Woods 3, a system that will be explained by commodities and transparency. What is the Project Enbridge? Or it is a digital platform that allows transparency, that it sidesteps the SWIFT. So I don't think people realize just how big this really is. And it's not just gold and silver. It's everything that is central to building a vibrant economy, that is central to building strength, and not just opaque debt instruments like we do, but that are rehypothecated and sold over and over and over again to create leverage and perceptions or illusions of reality. But this is the rest of the world that right now, you know, there's 10 countries in the BRICS and another 36 that have formally applied. You're talking the majority of human population, the majority of all the trade routes. They have the entire Red Sea and Straits of Hormuz covered with the countries that are in it now. And the last one, I think, is Sudan, that just applied. They have it covered. They have the majority of the oil and gas. They have the majority of the precious metals production and consumption. And not only that, the majority of all the rare earth metals are found in the Eurasian continent. We haven't thought this battery thing out real well. So all I'm simply saying is this is a real deal, brother. And when you ask that question, I know you didn't bargain for that answer, but it's
so good.
And I think it's just gaining steam and momentum.
I agree with everything you said, but that's what, I guess, I don't want to laugh, but your last comment, I didn't think that through. But I think really the whole thing, especially the last tail end, is very, very important that people need to understand. This is not just precious metals. This is all commodities, but even like the really important commodities. In the agriculture, I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, what are people going to eat? You know what I mean?
Well, that's so, just it. And that's just it. And, you know, as it is, even before the 36 countries that have formally applied and the 20 plus that have informally applied, you know, you're talking, you know, a much larger percentage of global population, three of the four largest nuclear arsenals on the planet, a bigger swath of global GDP right now before they make these additions. And so you're talking really a very formidable foe. The majority of all the oil production on the planet, natural gas and the rare earths and all of this stuff, and it's gaining steam. And they are finding safety in numbers because our idiot Treasury Secretary is going around the world saying, if you do this, you're done, but we can do it, but you can't. And so they're saying, the hell with it. This is just suicide. And that's why I think it's too stupid to be stupid, Andy. This is planned. And when you, especially when you look at what we've done to the inside of the country, open borders, lawlessness, questions surrounding the election and the judicial system, and, you know, and
weaponized judicial
and cancel
system.
Culture. Yes, yeah. This is not the same country you and I were kids in. It's not.
Yeah. And I'm afraid for my kids. I really am. So two other things I really wanted to talk about and really that they're pressing. I see the banking system getting all locked up, mucked up, if you would. And it's really like, I don't see the Fed having any other choice but to lower rates. And I'm not making a prediction, like they're lowering rates next meeting. And when is that? In June or May? And then June? I'm not saying that, but I am saying they're not going to lower rates.
Well, and, you know, if they do, they signal an end to austerity. They signal an end to ever normalizing their balance sheet. And they tell the world what they already know. Pardon my French here, but we're fucked. we're in a corner. If we try to normalize the balance sheet, we break everything up. And if we go away from it, we do what all governments have since the beginning of time, and that is choose inflation over austerity by lowering rates. But here's a very interesting thing. At the end of a hiking cycle and the beginning of rate cuts, this is when precious metals really start to move. And if you keep in mind what has happened over the previous rate hike cycles, let me read it to you. In June 2000, the Fed completed its last rate hike cycle. Gold appreciated 47% in the next 4 years. In June 2006, the Fed raised rates for the last time in that cycle, and gold was 50% higher by 2008. And December 2018, the Fed finished off that rate hiking cycle. Gold was 47% higher by the third quarter of 2020. In all three instances, the central bank pushed up the front end rates, and that broke something. And that's this massive inversion in the yield curve that we've seen, the longest inversion I've ever seen.
I've never seen it this long.
That's right. And that creates distortions, right? Massive distortions. And that's what this is saying. So if you're right, and if they do give in, you know, they were already saying four rate hikes for sure, and now maybe three, and maybe none if inflation stays sticky. Well, you know, who knows? They lie to us nonstop. If you remember, they told us there was no inflation, but then it was transitory, but then it was structural, and now it's under control. But here it is moving up again. You don't know what. Just like Bernanke told us the subprime crisis was contained, and a few days later, the whole thing blew up. What comes out of the Fed's mouth, you should almost do the opposite or think the opposite. So yes, the market believes there will be rate cuts, which is good for gold because it just signals that, you know, we will never get serious about normalizing our balance sheet. And this is why we're screwed, because the rest of the world understands that, and that you know, by holding our dollars, we're holding an inflating asset. And, you know, when you talk about inflation going higher because they lower rates, well, that's going to, you're going to have to, who's going to want to buy our debt with any length of maturity? Nobody. And that leads to monetization of assets, which leads to higher rates because it leads to hyperinflation. Monetization of asset means that the Fed has to buy the bonds, create money to buy bonds, which leads to Weimar Republic and hyperinflation. Exactly. All roads lead to the same place. And that's why I say this is planned, because Richard Russell, my mentor, always said 20 years ago, he was like, the Fed's screwed. At this point, with only 15, 16, 17 trillion in debt back then, he said, look, you know, they can only inflate or default, one or the other. I think they've chosen option three, and that's to find a villain. You sign an executive order to go green, which is the linchpin of the dollar hegemony. You tell you know, the world that, no, we're going to sanction you, and you, because we don't like what you're doing. Doesn't matter if it resembles what we're doing, because we make the rules. You create a situation in our country where the culture is being whitewashed, and no one recognizes this environment of what this country is in its respect of law and order and judicial system and elections, and everything that made this country special is up in the air and being questioned. So, you know, to think that they could actually no longer take dollars for oil, to me, is not a far-fetched when you see that United Arab Emirates just said that. They're the seventh largest producer of oil in the world and an OPEC producer, and joined BRICS alongside Saudi Arabia. They said, we don't want dollars anymore. What if all of OPEC says that? The synthetic demand that has been created by the U.S. dollar, by being the petrodollar, where every single country in the world's had to stockpile it to buy energy, as 90% of all oil sales have been in dollars for the last 50 years. If that goes away, so does the U.S. economy like that. And the world dumps dollars. And the inflation that is created, the hyperinflation, triggers interest rates to spike. And there's your great reset. There is your villain. Because stocks, bonds, real estate, the banking system, the insurance companies that are loaded with treasuries, they're all over leverage, bang. And the distortions that have been created by suppressing interest rates for so long and throwing trillions of dollars at the problem has created misallocations in resources and capital and distortions in asset prices. It's really a very scary thing to think what could happen. But if you do that, you now start the system over. And the interesting thing about it, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government, military pensions, over $100+ trillion.
That's not the books.
It's all owed to the American public. And all the treasuries, you know, China's been dumping treasuries. So has Japan and Saudi Arabia. Yeah. They've all been dumping treasuries and buying gold, as I've been saying, in replacement. Who's been buying the treasuries? Oh, yeah, that's us. chasing yield, the money markets, the hedge funds, the money managers, people leaving the banks, buying treasuries. Oh yeah, we own it all. So if everything were to blow up, the majority of this $150 trillion debt, mind you, a trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. It's all owed to us. Have no fear. The number two in charge is here, Lael Brainard, modern monetary theorist. She ran Point on FedNow. She worked with MIT in development of the central bank digital currency that Biden fast-tracked by executive order. This is what she wants. The whole system to reset, sign on the dotted line, you know, the mark of the beast, sign on the dotted line, and you too can be made whole by taking the central bank digital currency. Almost all of the debt, the majority of it, is owed to the American people. It's a whole hell of a lot easier to default on us and start over and say they did it to us. And the people in this country who are even the ones that are well-read, just reading the wrong stuff, will believe it and patriotically will take, and out of necessity, will take the CBDC, because no one wants to take something that kills your privacy unless you have no choice. And that no choice would be everything which is inversely correlated to the stock market or to the rise in rates, including the banks and the insurance companies, going poof. And now you start all over. And I hope to God I'm wrong, but if we were really serious about maintaining the world reserve status, and by the way, the number one economic advisor, Jared Bernstein, you know, he says we shouldn't have it. It's a privilege we can no longer afford. He's written all sorts of stuff about it. So if we really did lose it as a result of losing the petro status, you know, forget the fact that we've gone green and signed an executive order and let our country turn into a place that anyone who's 50 or younger or older, rather, does not remember anymore what country we live in. When you look around the big cities and talk about the election and the Justice Department, all this stuff, I mean, it's just a perfect storm where if they flip the switch, everything blows up and everyone loses everything. Those people who can't see what's coming can't get out of the way of it. And now you have a rallying cry. These people did it to us. We have to start from scratch, build from the ashes, take the CBDC, and you will be made whole so you don't suffer and starve. And I hope I'm wrong, but it just too much makes sense. And this, the actions of our government, instead of clinging to the exorbitant privilege of being the world reserve and doing all we can to uphold the image of law and order and justice and respect and you know, that this country has exemplified for, you know, decades, we're doing the opposite. And yeah. Is it too stupid to be stupid? Could it actually be planned? I don't know. You tell me. Either that or our politicians, led by Janet Yellen, are just completely inept and borderline treasonous and
yeah, leading a
dark path, brother. And I want people to understand, I don't say any of this to get people to call me to buy gold. I say this because I see it so clearly and it really frightens me. And I've been saying it for 4 years before anyone was. And the scariest part about it, I've been right. And I hope that the end result, I'm wrong, the very end. But I'll tell you what's interesting is that when I get to that point in my mind where I see the dollar being dumped as a petrodollar and the ramifications of that, that's where my mind goes blank. I don't know what the world looks like after that, but I will tell you it will be a very drastic difference from what all of us have grown accustomed to in this wonderful country that people leading us are just squandering just how great this country really is. And so little by little, hopefully people wake up and do what they can to get out of the way of this problem.
Yeah, you know, the thing is what you just said, you have been right a lot, and I've been right a lot. I hope we're both wrong, but hope is a terrible place to be. You don't want to hope. That is a bad strategy.
Yes, it is.
So, and I think you need to plan and you take it upon yourself to be a part of a community and to plan accordingly and be there for each other and plan accordingly, really. Real quick, real briefly. So, and I know your time is very valuable. And again, I'm very grateful for it, but
my pleasure.
Real quick. I mean, we're on the brink of World War III here, and I'm just hoping and praying that some cooler heads prevail, but it makes me think that this whole thing is rigged there as well. I mean, have people just lost their minds? Do you really want a nuclear war here? I mean, in a bunch of oil fields, that is just insane to me. So, and for the record, I don't have a dog in the fight. I get it. People are killing each other. And there's a bunch of like travesty all over. I get all that. I really do. But this is insane. So how does this play into all of that? What's your opinion on that? And I'm not asking you a political question, but like the whole big picture, is this part of that?
I mean, you'd have to think it is, because why does everyone know it's insane but the people that are running the country? Why does everyone, right. I mean, it why is it that we can give $100 billion to the Ukraine, but yet we don't pay $5 billion to build the border wall that Trump started, and we've let 10 million people in this country, 12 million in illegally? What if 1% of those people want to do damage to the United States? For those of you that were watching the news last night, you got these people meeting in the United States, in New York, and saying death to the United States, death to the United States. I mean, do they understand what country they are in right now? And so right. If 1% of those people want to do damage to this country, that's 120,000 people. How about 3%? That's 360,000 people. That's more than a standing army in many cases. And yeah. So the things that we have done are just ridiculous, whether it be, you know, you could call it an invasion, allowed an invasion in this country.
That's what it is.
And or are incentivizing and sparking a war. I mean, you know, with what's going on around the world, if we get out of this without there being World War III, you know, I'll be shocked in some form or another. And look, I would really like to hope that that doesn't happen. I mean, there really is nothing that I can say that will add any color to the idiocy of our geopolitical endeavors. And, you know, what's crazy about all of this is just how we go around believing that we are holier than everyone else, where, you know, Janet Yellen just told China that if you even think of giving any money to Russia to fund the Ukrainian effort, we're going to sanction you. But yet we can, you know, give billions and billions and billions to the Ukraine to fund the war against Russia. And so, I mean, just that in and of itself, we can do it, but you can't. Just goes to show how stupid we are. And then to foster this environment, to start to talk about Ukraine joining NATO or Finland or Sweden joining NATO. I mean, you're just poking. And, you know, there's no coming back. I think it was Einstein who said the next world war, the one after the next, will be fought with sticks and stones, because the one, you know, the third one will be so bad, there'll be nothing left. And I think it was him who said it. If not, someone said that. But the point of it is that, you know, let's just hope that the cooler heads do prevail, because we are provoking Russia in a way that I think if it were the other way around, the world would look at things a little bit differently. And, you know, they have nuclear weapons. And the one thing that they said all along is NATO will not encroach upon us any more than if Mexico and Canada joined the BRICS, we would feel comfortable with having BRICS military installments in Canada and in Mexico. And, you know, I mean, I'm not condoning, and this isn't political, but put yourself in their position.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and say, if this is happening and you're getting encroached upon by, in essence, the enemy, who is doing all they can to, except for putting boots on the ground, they're funding it and giving munitions and
giving, you know,
yeah, and giving, you know, everything in terms of you know, insight into where the enemy is at and satellite imagery and all of the things that they need to be more successful. That's okay, as long as we're not the ones pulling the trigger. We're doing everything. But I mean, these are real problems. So when you talk about that, God help us if it happens. I think maybe these countries understand they can beat us without firing a weapon, just by destroying us financially. And they do that by dumping treasuries and no longer accepting dollars for oil, and it's game over in this country. So let's just hope that there are ways to fight wars that don't entail nuclear bombs and because with hypersonic missiles, we got about 3 or 4 minutes, to kiss our family goodbye. God help us. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not the guy to ask that question, because I'm not really up on military stuff. But other than to say, it's just insanity that we would even have this conversation. And that's all due to our politicians and our leaders, who have lost their bearing. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I would agree. So, Andy Shechtman, thank you so much. I'd love to You don't need an intro or an exit. Everybody knows who you are, but please tell us if there's listeners out there that have never heard of you, please tell them how they get in touch with you. And
absolutely, brother. I mean, the best way right now, we have our third version of our new site that's coming out in June, which is going to be very, very easy to do business on. They can always go to milesfranklin.com. But to get our special price list, and please say Andy Millett sent me in the subject line, it's prices we hold close to the vest that should be as good or better than anyone in the country. Send us an email to info@milesfranklin.com. Any questions that you have regarding what you've heard on this podcast, questions on precious metals IRAs, or just want the price list and no questions, or ask to be contacted if you want, info@milesfranklin.com, and we will gladly send that out to you with no obligation whatsoever. And hey, man, I love the conversation. I'd love to come back on as often as you have me. And, you know, I think it's, as the Chinese curse says, Andy, may you live in interesting times. And I'd like doing an interview with a guy like you. I'll never have to look and see what your name is, like you were saying to me. It flows easily. So sometimes I got to look at them. Oh, that's right. I'm talking to John. So anyways, I appreciate it, brother. And I would love to come back and pick up where we left off. I do think these interesting times, which is a curse, are only going to get more interesting as we draw closer to the big meeting in October in Russia, the BRICS meeting, and also the, of course, the election in November. So lots going on, probably lots more to talk about. And I will indeed look forward to picking up where we left off.
Absolutely. You can come on anytime. So, all right, brother. God bless. And
God bless you too, Andy. You stay well, man. Talk soon.
Take care.
You too.